Claude. Lindsay Coleman, family law attorney and criminal defense attorney. Welcome to Luncheon and a Divorce Lawyer.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's been nice catching up with you, and always excited to have somebody with a unique practice area. I don't really know anything about criminal law. So we're going to talk a little bit about what the overlay of criminal and family law, and yeah, some exciting war stories I'm sure you can clue us in on. So I'm just teasing that out. And but before we go there, Lindsay, so kind of what tell me about your path to your current status of a prestigious practitioner, I think mostly in Lake and Cook counties in criminal and family law. How did you land there? Like, did you watch some TV shows as a adolescent, or give me a little backstory on yourself, Lindsay?
Sure, thanks for the warm introduction. Basically, in college, I knew I was interested in law. I knew I was interested in people, but I wasn't really sure what direction to go to. So I had an internship for mediation, worked in the courthouses, fell in love with the courthouse. I started working at the state's attorney's office, fell in love with criminal law, the courthouse, the courtroom. And after a while, I thought, what's more criminal than criminal law and prosecuting family law? And so it was a nice little transition from the state's attorney's office to a family law office. And I learned about orders of protection and I learned about family law. But the one thing that remained constant in a ton of cases is there's domestic violence, orders of protection. And then all of a sudden, there's the family lawyer who needs to then tell their client, you need a criminal defense attorney. And I thought, wait, I can do both. And flip side to that, there are a lot of attorneys that don't do both that contact me to discuss both types of cases. So after that got started, I said, you know what? I'm going to create a little niche. And it's just been so rewarding ever since.
That's cool. Yeah, I saw what a couple state's attorney positions, and then what family law, and then you've had your own firm since 2011, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Here, just quick tangential. So, I mean, I see you have some collegiate sports in your history. Is that right?
I do. I
Where
grew up,
at Miami of
yep.
Ohio, Oxford?
Yes, amazing school, loved it.
What were you a two sport athlete or one?
Yeah, so I started out playing softball. And I decided for multiple reasons that I also loved volleyball. So I said, why don't I switch over to volleyball? Eventually, I played club until I was done at Miami and continued to play beach volleyball and a ton of volleyball leagues, even after college, law school, and well into my 30s.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm a D2 college football alum myself, but I'm still a huge college sports fan.
Definitely.
Does that
Nothing
come
better
in,
than college
how does that
sports.
come into your practice? Does it?
It does. I've actually had the pleasure of representing a lot of athletes, former professional athletes. I have a current former professional athlete, and it's just great because you can relate to athletes and kind of help them get through the court system without that winning losing mentality. So it's been great to try to help with the clients' expectations who are athletes.
That's cool. That's exciting. You have some athlete clients. I feel like it's one of those areas, I don't know, just personal opinion. You have like stuff like food, entertainment slash music, maybe, or sports that kind of like help you connect with almost anybody. Like, they're universally discussed if you're the CEO or the person working the counter at McDonald's. Like, everybody kind of has some of those interests, include, like, right, you could talk to anybody at any demographic level, male, female, other, about the Super Bowl, right? I mean, I'm not right, and so yeah,
Yeah,
I'm
there's something out there for everyone, whether you're watching, for example, the Super Bowl. Let's see the ads. Let's see the music at the halftime show. Let's watch the football game. I love that there's a little bit of something out there for everyone.
All right, so let's try to transition here into this exciting overlay, legitimately an interesting overlay of criminal and family law, because yeah, I mean, right, I'm really a pure family law attorney, right? I represent people in divorce and child custody cases. I'm thinking out loud here on my feet, how many times have I stepped inside of a criminal courtroom in my attorney role? My goodness, I think it's like twice, maybe not much more than that. Because right for me, right, family law, just right, civil practice area. Criminal is like a whole nother world. That's a like I'm used to kind of glad handling, let's negotiate some issues. I feel like you walk into the criminal courtroom, it's a different animal over there. So I'm getting a little uncomfortable even talking about it. But so I don't know. Why don't we kick off here? Because I'm not as well like outlined as I should be here. Here's where I've run into like criminal family law overlay the most, and then you can take it from here. But is frankly, it's kind of in the order of protection space, right? Because those can be both civil and criminal. And I'm just thinking of a current client of mine where there was an order of protection in place. But then, along with that criminal order of protection, there were some additional charges brought, like what would be common, maybe a battery or an assault charge tied to the criminal OP. But I don't know, just with that as a starting point, kind of like, yeah, what are you thinking about? I don't know, for Bill Smith in that little situation who might be going through a divorce, but then also there's this criminal action in my just little scenario. Maybe it's a criminal OP with a few related charges. Kind of like, how are what's your approach, or what's your first kind of thought with Bill Smith?
Yeah, so basically, it sounds like Bill Smith was charged with some sort of, as you said, domestic battery, maybe a violation of an order of protection. So there must be a criminal charge that is
Right.
in place for a criminal order of protection to be filed and obtained. And that generally starts with the state's attorney
Right.
asking the complaining witness slash victim, and in our cases, it's usually the partner, the soon-to-be ex, the family member, and they say, "Would you like to file a criminal order of protection?" Sometimes they just say, "Here's a piece of paper. It's a criminal order of protection. Sign here." And the idea is, in a criminal courtroom, not only are we defending against a domestic battery charge, violation of order of protection, you name it, the charge is there. But we're also realizing there's a criminal order protection in place. So that's brought in criminal cases. And it's much different than a civil order protection procedurally, but it's also one that's going to be in place where all the petitioner, the victim needs to do is sign a petition. There's not a hearing. It's almost an automatic granting in a criminal case.
Interesting. Because at a real pure level, leaving aside additional charges, what's the distinguish points of distinguish or difference between civil order of protection and criminal?
Yeah, and it's actually that basic. Civil order protection is heard in a civil courtroom,
Right.
or it's transferred into a civil family law case. The burdens are much different. There are ways to start out the case. For example, if you want to get an emergency order of protection, the petitioner in a civil case has to fill out the petition, put down some reasons why they need this, go in front of a judge. And it's a lesser burden to say, I really need this order of protection. Notices has to be given. The other side can defend, move to vacate it. It could be denied. It's a civil hearing. But in a criminal case, the defendant who this is entered against doesn't really have those rights to fight it. It's pretty much an automatic, and it could even last automatically as either part of the offer, sentence, or agreement 2 years after the disposition of the criminal case.
These are just things that are popping into my head because I hear I'm asking you to put your assistant state's attorney hat on here, or something. If you have, did they give those out in Boone County or Lake County or wherever? I'm
I
not
think we had
sure.
those in Lake County a long time ago.
I did an internship with the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office. Actually, that's probably I wasn't quite candid. Like that's probably my greatest criminal law experience was a summer in the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office. Of course, since I've been an attorney, none, right? Like I said, like one or two times stepping in a criminal courtroom. But this is something I don't know. I just hear from my clients is like, I feel like some people will say, oh, like the police just told me to try and go get an order of protection, right? But it didn't at all go through, right? State's attorney chain of command. But then obviously some do. I mean, how's that call getting made? Like how, you know what I mean? Like what's that process there? Like, 'cause I mean, like far more often in my experience, right, I'm seeing civil orders of protection, right, that you know eventually are consolidated potentially into the family law case. But you know sometimes obviously they go that criminal route. Is it just sort of like some assistant state attorney is making a call, right, on that charging situation? I mean, you know, I don't know the inner workings of stuff, but it seems much rarer that it goes down that road.
And I would say it definitely depends on the domestic battery charges. It depends on how severe the violation of the order of protection is. Generally, in Cook County, sometimes Lake County, if there's a criminal charge, domestic battery, violation of order of protection, it's going to be almost mandatory that there's a criminal order of protection. And it sounds simple, but it's easy to get confused. In a criminal order of protection, there has to be a criminal courtroom, a criminal case. It has to attach criminally. There's no overlay of a criminal into a civil order of protection. But like a civil order of protection, a lot of the times law enforcement shows up to the house or the residence, they see there's an argument, they immediately say it's a domestic, and they have to give out the piece of paper advising people on how to get an order of protection civil. And people get scared and they have to go file one. Or
Right.
DCFS is there and they say, you need a civil order of protection, you got to protect your child, or we're going to take your child away. So some civil orders of protection should never be filed. Those are more discretionary, up to the individual, up to even an attorney advising them to get one done for legal relief. But the criminal order of protection is in a criminal courtroom and they're quite separate, but the effect is still the same. Please don't contact this other person.
So me as a neophyte criminal law attorney or a potential client, because right, this is a worldwide audience here, Lindsay, lawyers and non-lawyers. What am I thinking about if I have those two tracks going at the same time as a neophyte criminal attorney? When, because you know, Bill Smith, the hypo, is sort of a real situation that I'm dealing with and have dealt with, right? I'm in Bill's divorce, but then there's also the criminal case that's also tracking the criminal order of protection. Again, there were a couple other charges attached that I'm forgetting about now. But what needs to be top of mind for me and my client inside the divorce case? What do I need to really be careful on?
A couple things, and that's a great question, and that's one I'm getting hit with all the time. Essentially, in a civil case, there really isn't what we call a Fifth Amendment privilege not to incriminate yourself.
Right.
And a lot of civil attorneys forget that. They think that, laser focus, I have a civil order of protection, I have a domestic relations case. I really want to move this forward and do a great job, but what we should be doing for Bill Smith is saying, what's going on in his criminal case?
Yeah.
Is there going to be an offer, an agreement, a trial? We have to protect his Fifth Amendment rights because we're not sure what's going to happen. And he can't say much of anything until that case is resolved. So we would go back to you as his domestic relations attorney and say, you know what? Let's let the criminal case work out. Let the civil family law court know that we have to wait and defer. And the other important thing is a lot of cases might have children, and there might be a guardian ad litem or a child rep or someone appointed to talk to the children. And if it's a guardian ad litem and they talk to Bill Smith, and Bill Smith says, oh, I love my children. My ex is, we got into a fight, and here's everything that happened. What he doesn't understand is he just confessed what he might have been accused of doing
Right.
to a guardian ad litem. Or he could do the same thing if in a civil courtroom in domestic relations, there's a hearing, a pretrial, he's confessing. He's not
Right.
exercising his right to plead the fifth.
Yeah, I feel like that is the one kind of like flashing red light that at least is in my head if or when I, run into that situation is basically right. Don't say stupid stuff that's going to incriminate you on the criminal case. The example I'm thinking of, and this would be, if I was in a similar situation with you, I would imagine as well. But, this gentleman, thankfully, had the means to basically have the family law attorney and a good criminal defense attorney. So that, A, that criminal defense attorney is a great resource to me, as the neophyte. And then, yeah, the other kind of just thought po that pops into my head, yeah, is what, well, yeah, you sort of slow play the family law case, and I guess in a sense, sort of you do have to really just sort of in terms of client relationship, preach a bit of patience, especially in the minor child sort of situation, minor children issues, because right, in a lot of cases, I guess I could foresee that then now dad's parenting time is just going to be paused, which would kind of suck. In my real situation, what was nice for my ability to work with it was the children weren't protected parties in the OP, and so we could kind of play out some parenting time. It wasn't ideal and too liberal or expansive. But at least we didn't have to do a hard stop in the situation I'm thinking of specifically.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And those are things where it is so important for if Bill Smith has a criminal defense attorney and a domestic relations attorney, the attorneys need to talk and communicate and be on the same page. What I love is if I'm the criminal defense attorney, I am constantly in communication with the domestic relations attorney and vice versa. Or sometimes I could be both of those attorneys. I could represent Bill Smith in a civil case and the criminal, but what's really important is communication. One of my most fun stories, and I really try to work with the other side, and I let them know I'm representing the respondent in a civil order protection. The civil domestic relations attorney said, we have a civil order protection hearing. I want to answer ready. Let's put on the hearing. It's set in a week from now. I tried to tell this attorney in no uncertain terms, we should kick this. Let's do it by agreement. This attorney, he thought he had his case down pat. He
Right.
wasn't understanding if we go forward on a civil order protection hearing, there's going to be a court transcript. Let's just say Bill Smith is also his client.
Right.
And he testifies either A, if there's an assistant state's attorney that wants to sit in the courtroom, or I can give the transcript to the state's attorney, and suddenly they don't really have a good case for their criminal.
Right.
But if I want to avoid that, and Bill Smith says, you know, I really want to see my children, what we can do in the criminal case is modify his conditions of pretrial release. He was arrested. He'd have to sit in jail until his case is resolved. But pretrial conditions say don't contact the mother, don't contact the other family members, no unlawful contact. I could amend it. in the conditions, and he can have parenting time or face time. So there are ways we could amend the conditions in criminal court, and then the family lawyer can say, okay, let's go forward, because it's horrible when you can't see your children, especially
Right.
if they're not protected parties.
Yeah. All right. So, in my experience, which actually is pretty substantial, Lindsay, the order of protection stuff is far and away the thing that like walks into my world the most, just right as a divorce custody attorney. Here's a funny one. Let's see if you're ready for it. So, right. The only other time I see people locked up on occasion, right, is for like, maybe like civil contempt, right? I didn't pay child support, I don't have a good reason to, and now a judge is gonna enter a body attachment or something. So let me ask you this, because this is kind of real. It's not funny, funny not funny. Right, what happens to that body attachment order when it gets entered? It goes into like the lead system that stands for something, law enforcement, something, database, maybe. Because this has been something I've genuinely observed, just as like a point of fact, or just like the like a real world situation is, right? People aren't in courtrooms these days, right? Or very rarely are. Whenever I've seen people get arrested for civil contempt of court, right? It was kind of, right, you're in person. Hey, I'm holding you in contempt, right? Sheriff comes up behind somebody and you walk out the back door. I mean, that's, right? That's not our world anymore. So what's that kind of back end look like? I mean, right? Is that's now in a database where, now if Bill Smith in our hypothetical has a body attachment against him, I mean, he can obviously turn himself in or otherwise. It's kind of in the system where law enforcement can see it if he's kind of picked up on other things or a speeding ticket or something. That's been a point of curiosity for me. Like what happens just even in the civil contempt world when court is 70% virtual these days?
It's a great question,
Is
and
it a
varies.
weaker enforce is it like a weaker enforcement tool now? Like real
Depends
world.
on your judge,
Yeah.
and it's great even if you're remote. Let's say Bill Smith didn't pay child support,
Right.
and he didn't have any good cause, as you said, no justification. And let's say he owes a certain dollar amount. We'll just say a couple thousand dollars. Well, the judge could say, I'm going to remand you to the Cook County Jail. I'm
Right.
going to set a purge of either, this dollar amount or whatever dollar amount. Always depends on the facts and the financial situation. And
Sure.
I'm giving you keys to your jail cell. You
Right.
could pay the purge amount and get out, or if you don't feel like doing that, every 30 days, you'll be brought in front of me and given me a reason that you'd like to sit in jail for up to 6 months. So it's one of those things where sometimes in Zoom court, when the judge says there's a body attachment and the person shows up to court by Zoom, the judge will say, all right, you have an hour to get to Daly Center or whatever the courthouse is. Some judges have their own teams of deputies. They take them right in and they're processed.
Yeah.
And it's really meant for, in a civil case, for litigants to listen to the court orders.
Oh,
The judge's
sure.
orders and judges' sale of time are not advisory. If I tell you you have so many days to pay and you don't, you're going to be held in indirect civil contempt. And if you still don't pay, we're going to issue a body attachment. And you can either pay through the jail, because now you're going to have to sit for a few hours to 30 days to 6 months and follow my court order. It's more of a deterrent.
Yeah, I've just really have been kind of like pondering that. I don't know, well, if it's just because of how kind of courtrooms are run these days. Like you're not like back in the day, right? You're kind of just like planted in a courtroom for a couple hours, maybe waiting a little bit. And I feel like you see more cases, and I'd see somebody get, incarcerated once in a while, or I've had it happen myself. I used to be on a list of attorneys that could be actually appointed in Cook County to defend on criminal or not criminal civil contempt. But yeah, just kind of really just I just really it really seems like I have not seen that happening as much. And then I think there is actually a real world aspect to it when you're not there in person. I don't think, civil contempt of court is being like aggressively gone after the same way a first degree murder suspect is. At least that's my, again, my neophyte attorney, non-criminal attorney hat doesn't seem they're really gone after that aggressively if you're not just like in the courtroom type thing.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I've seen some judges do it by Zoom, and it's not as effective. But if Bill Smith hears a judge in Zoom court say, "You have an hour to get here to the courthouse, and we're
Yeah.
going to deal with this,"
Oh
well,
yeah.
you
No,
don't
I'm not
need
saying, yeah. No, I'm not
to.
trying to, but yeah, I'm just kind of just curious how like, yeah, the sort of a how to it actually plays out has changed rather
Yeah, and I've
dramatically.
even seen things where we're in a courtroom, whether it's Zoom or in person, judge says, "I'm going to sentence you to 30 days. You haven't paid. There's a body attachment." And then I've also seen litigants literally break down and say, "I'll pay, I'll pay, I'll pay." So the judges, some judges really do try to give Bill Smith the last opportunity possible, because otherwise we're just wasting time and resources being remanded. But if Bill Smith, he hasn't paid, doesn't have a reason, this judge is going to make it clear, "Bill, you're going to do a little bit of time being remanded. Go look what it feels like to be processed. And hopefully in the future, you'll remember you have a child support obligation."
Yeah, no, 100%, and humorous, but also true aside, I felt that a few of the or judges who I've always seen to be a little bit more aggressive and locking people up on civil contempt, maybe have retired in recent years. I'm just saying, I've kind of seen that. One person's opinion. Okay, so. What else here? Can I ask you one kind of last little criminal piece and maybe we can land the plane here?
Definitely.
I see some fathers kind of attorneys who market their practice that way really play into the idea like, visitation abuse is a crime. I've heard that somewhere. I won't name names, but I've heard that somewhere. But very genuinely, like, is that something that people really get prosecuted for? Have you seen that as a criminal, prosecutor or in family law? Because that's something, right? Wearing your family law hat, I'm always getting, "Hey, Peter, I was denied parenting time on Sunday." Like, that's I've gotten that email in the last 24 hours. But I don't think I've ever heard somebody, "Hey, Peter, somebody got prosecuted for visitation abuse." Am I out of whack, or is that just not
You're
really a
not,
used law?
no, you're
Or
not
is it just.
completely out of whack. Me doing criminal defense and family law, a few years ago, a case out of Cook County, highly contentious, post-decree, mom and dad do not get along. There's two children involved. Dad had mom cited almost 20 times with unlawful visitation interference. And what that means is, the father would get the police involved, go
Right.
to the house, talk to the children, talk to mom, find out why there's no parenting time, so long as dad could show there's a valid court order that says these days and times are his. And police don't like getting involved with these things. They rarely do. That's why it's so rare. So in this case, over a period of time, she had over almost 20 unlawful
Yes.
visitate. And it's more of the ways for the police to maybe placate the father. I mean, 20 is excessive almost. I
Right.
was able to go into court and get all of them thrown out without an issue, go back to the domestic relations attorney, let him know what happened. And that really threw their domestic relations case off, because even the judges in the courts, they don't want to really prosecute these quasi-criminal tickets. They're fines, really. And
I
again,
see.
it's meant to encourage some sort of parenting time. Now, the flip side to that is, I've also have a recent case I'm involved in where the mom literally interfered with the dad's parenting time, and she got one ticket of unlawful visitation interference. Now, what people don't know is you need three of them, three tickets for the criminal court to then prosecute and bring it into a criminal courtroom. So this young mother is going on one out of three unlawful visitation interferences, and the judge is aware of it. So it's not used a lot. In my opinion, it's used for when it's absolutely necessary by the police, but the police would most likely say, this is a domestic matter. You have a case going on. We're not getting involved. It's more for the egregious, or this is happening all the time. So yes, unlawful visitation interference is a little bit not commonly used.
Okay. No, just absolutely a point of curiosity with me, because you definitely right. You have constant back. I at least have constant back and forth. Like, I get denied, I, my mom and my child denied me this type of thing. And then you also hear a lot of, and I even give this advice sometimes, right? If you have your court order and she's denying, you call the police. I don't think that's, you tell me if that's a bad move, but
Yeah, it's not bad for a paper trail, so you can always document it.
yeah,
Not a bad
because so
idea.
yeah, so my perception is like that happens semi-frequently where hey, police get involved there. But like I said, I until you shared your history with me, I had literally never heard of somebody kind of getting ticketed or charged with visitation abuse, even though you kind of hear it bandied about in the world a little bit, but it just doesn't seem like it kind of actually happens real world.
Right. And the police really don't want to get involved with the family. They know the court has a ton of resources and they're used to dealing with this. It's really an avenue most police don't want to go down. But I've had a handful of cases where it happens, or maybe they just don't get to number three and it doesn't become a criminal case. But it's definitely something the judges want to take notice at because most judges know it's a little bit unusual to get some kind of ticket for unlawful visitation interference. It's more unusual to have three of them and actually have a criminal case.
Interesting. Yeah. So excessive, I could see that too. 'Cause, another oddball criminal violation I know I saw come up when it was excessive was there's, I believe there's still statute on, it's like abusive, like number of DCFS calls. I had somebody get charged for that. They kept making bogus DCFS, reports against an ex-husband. And once it got to be a big number, there is a, I believe there was at least, this is probably a decade ago, but there was criminal code on that being a potential criminal violation because of the excessiveness. But again, probably maybe a similar sort of situation where I see that happen all the time, the bogus DCFS sort of in family law, sort of a tactic. But yeah, when it got to a certain number, it became a criminal problem for a woman.
Yeah, definitely. And it's super scary. And DCFS investigators, they can only field, I think it's something like six reports before they have to toss it over to another DCFS caseworker. So in a case you and I have talked about before with a judge that we know quite well, there was constant DCF matters over and over, different people, same allegations about the minor child. So this child is what getting allegedly abused by multiple people at the same time. And it's one of those things where that would have been an appropriate case for that parent to be prosecuted. But this judge said, out of abundance of precaution, we'll just save this for the domestic relations trial. These will be triable issues of fact. We'll have the DCFS caseworkers, investigators testify. And then I could make that determination if the parent that called DCFS so often maybe isn't really the best parent to have the child the majority of time. Or maybe the parent needs to take some classes on how to co-parent or something. So I've seen it work backward too.
Yeah.
But criminally charged, yeah, that's that would make me think, what are the allegations?
Yeah. Hey, Lindsay, so we're as we land the plane here in the next 5-ish minutes, here are the fun bullet questions, okay? First, well, this might not be that fun, but like what's a good nugget, best and worst kind of advice for somebody in the midst or going through a divorce?
Yeah,
You have a couple tips?
Yeah, it's super hard going through a divorce, whether there's a criminal case or just a family law case or a protection. Either which way, hunker down, have open communication with your attorney, be honest with your attorney, even on the bad stuff, because if you don't tell the attorneys, if you don't tell us everything, we can't protect you or problem solve. So never be afraid to tell your attorneys everything that's going on would be probably the best advice. We always need to hear the truth from our clients. And I try to tell clients, you know, this person that you are in a relationship with, or you're not in a relationship with, we're in a relationship with better than I do. Let's have an open communication between clients and attorneys and work together. And just realize that this moment in time will pass. We'll get through it. It may not seem like it, but when you're on the other side looking back, you'll feel much better.
Yeah,
It's
good call.
not
Yeah,
supposed to be
full. Yeah,
comfortable.
full disclosure. Good one. Yeah, right. It's confidential communication. I mean, I always use the line. I don't know. I know you're a sports person. I don't know if you're a football fan, but you know the old New York Giants and Dallas Cowboys coach Bill Parcells used to have a funny, good, but legit line. It was something like, "You want me to make dinner, but I'm not allowed to cook the groceries." Like he was the coach, but somebody else was like the general manager, right, picking the team. But to me, my like law lawyer analogy is like, write the facts, right. The client's kind of responsible for giving me the facts that are going to help me, you know, do the good legal strategy. And right, if they're not honest and right open with the facts, it's hard for me to do the good legal strategy. So, and hey, what's some fun Chicagoland activity that, you know, our thousands of listeners might want to try that's, you know, you can be whatever you want, but maybe something non-obvious that, you know, I'll see if I haven't done it myself.
I'm a big sports fan, so definitely football is right up there. So definitely, go check out the events, go check out the sporting events. But something that's a little different and kind of fun in Chicago is just take a walk, wander
Okay.
around, look around, get out of the house, put some music on, check out what's going on, try a new restaurant. There's always different street fairs. There's always something fun to do. And I think the point is when you're going through a case, when you're an attorney, a client, your mind is just so boggled down with work, this case resolution. Take some time to do something fun. I love sports. I love watching football, college and pro. I love putting on my music and going for a walk. But I love just looking around and watching people. And then it's always great. Treat yourself to something different. You like a snack, chocolate, something salty. Treat yourself to something new.
What's a cool hike or walk within an hour or an hour and a half of where you are?
You can never go wrong walking along the beachfront. There
Okay.
is nothing better than hearing the water, being on the beachfront. The other thing is, just grab a pair of headphones, go to any hiking trail, and just kind of walk around. Lake County, Cook County has all sorts of great forest preserves. Get out there for 5, 10 minutes, get some fresh air, some sunshine. That's really it. It's that easy. And then if there's a great movie, go to the movie theaters.
Sounds
Just
good,
something to
Lindsay.
unplug.
Yeah, no, good stuff. Hey, so super grateful to have you jump on here, Lindsay. And so just a quick nugget on, so who's your ideal client? Who should be giving you a call when needed? And where can that person or anybody find you and, you know, learn more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. The greatest fulfillment I get from representing clients is someone that has a criminal case with probably a domestic relations case or an order protection case. And what I love to do is be the criminal defense attorney or the order protection attorney and collaborate and work with the domestic relations attorney. We're in constant communication. The clients feel like they have a team of attorneys, two of us that are working together to make sure all legal needs are met and none is being overlooked. So I love that part, and I love the teamwork, and I love helping the domestic relations attorneys consult with their cases. And likewise, when we talk, we make sure our client's on the same page. And the greatest thing about that is because the client is as relaxed as humanly possible. And with a more relaxed client that we have full communication with, it's easier to get the cases done because they're on board and they are fully informed at all times of what's going on.
That's great. Yeah, you're definitely my first call for any interplay of criminal family law. So, and hey, Lindsay, your website is what?
It is www.lindsaycolemanlaw.com. Best way to get a hold of me is by email, and we make it a point to always get a hold of all inquiries as soon as possible, usually the same day, just to say thank you so much for reaching out to us, and let's take it from there step by step. And that's my approach with cases. Step one, you called an attorney. What are the next few steps so we don't overwhelm the client? They have enough going on in their personal world, and my job would be to help ease them and do whatever I can working with the other attorney that we're all calm, cool, and rational because there's a lot going on in their case. We can make their lives easier by helping them.
Awesome. LindsayColemanLaw.com. I think there's a paint. Is that a Monet on the website so I can
It is.
chill out a little bit? I haven't been to the Art
Yeah,
Institute
it isn't a
lately.
viceroy with the bridge. That's kind of how I approach all my cases. In the beginning, you're going uphill a little bit, but I'm
Right.
right next to you. We're going
That's
uphill
cool.
together. We hit the top of the bridge. Okay, we can see there's an end, and then we go downhill together. And that is the most rewarding thing when I start with a client whose life is just understandably horrible, with children, without children, their whole life is changing. But if I
Right.
can get them up, plateau, and down, walking right next to them, it's the greatest feeling. And then to have that person look back and say, wow, I made it through. Did not know that was possible. It's such a wonderful feeling.
All righty. Well, thanks again, Lindsay, and have a great day.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much. Have a good day too. Thanks for having me.